Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to Pro Wrestling Flashback. I am Sinbad, of course. We have Contrer with me. What's going on, Contrer?
Not much. What's going on?
Not too much. I love that Clash theme from the old Clash of the Champion. I love it so much that, like, I wish we could just, like, put the volume down to 10 and just let it play, like, the whole time. You know, like, just have it in the background the whole time. Let's see how annoying it would be. Here, I guess. See if I can get it to play. Come on, work. Apparently it's not working, so that stinks. Oh, God. All right, well, yeah, there it is. See, we could totally talk over this. I mean, you can hear me fine, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, see? We're just going to have we're going to let the theme play out while we're starting this thing off. So, we are in 1993. I think we left off at the beginning of April, or the beginning of May. It's April, right?
Yeah, April.
April. All right, so where did we leave off?
I think this was starting the big Cactus Jack, Big Van Vader feud on WCW Saturday Night.
It was starting then, but yeah. All right, so we have the house shows are going on, and there's a lot of Cactus Jack Vader tag matches on these house shows going on. And the crew we're working with mainly, in WCW at the time, like we kind of left off at, the undercard had like Too Cold Scorpio, Max Payne, Barbarian, Van Hammer, Vinny Vegas was still there, Ricky Steamboat and Shane Douglas, for the amount of time, Hollywood Blondes, of course, were the tag champs at the time. Paul Orndorff, I don't know if I said that already. But yeah, like, there's a lot of feuds building, and what's gone?
One of the things, real quick, they actually thought was a really cool team when they started putting them together with Chris Benoit and Bobby Eaton. And they had, like,
a little short
run at the team.
Yeah, it was pretty short, though. Wasn't it only, like, a month or so?
Yeah, it's like a month. Yeah, 2 or 3 months, I think.
Yeah, it was a cool little thing that they were doing. Benoit still had a lot of Japanese commitments at the time, I think.
Yeah,
and,
he was in and out. Pretty much then he was out.
He was in and out. Yes. Yeah. So we have the Vader feud with Cactus Jack. It's building. It's building. And the main thing was Cactus wrestled Vader on Saturday night. And Vader was, like, the unbeatable champion at the time. And no one was even coming close to beating him, including Sting and Ron Simmons and all the guys. And anybody, like, if he wrestled, like, a mid-carder like Scorpio, I mean, he would most likely squash the guy, you know? You wouldn't get a lot of offense against him. And Cactus Jack wrestled him, and they had, like, a back-and-forth match, and Cactus won by countout, and
it was a brutal deal at the time. It was a freaking brutal match. I mean,
it was. It was great.
Have there been in like an uncensored version of that out? Because I think they censored it for TV. I think it might be actually be on like one of the Mick Foley DVDs.
It is.
One of the matches, and I mean, he just laying it in, and I mean, you can just the shots to the face and. He got a broken nose out of it. I mean, it was just freaking brutal. But Cactus was the guy that didn't mind taking it, and Vader obviously was the guy that didn't mind dishing it out, so that was good.
Well, because they were really trying to build up this angle because it was supposed to be something big. You know, it was like the goofy stuff that eventually comes along for it wasn't really supposed to happen. You know, like there's a variety of injuries and stuff like that that kind of led to all these things happening, but... they had that match, and I mean, at the time You know, you didn't see matches like that. You know, they cut off a lot of it off TV. A lot of it was cut. But, I mean,
yeah.
Even watching it on TV, if you watch the TV version, you can still tell it's a sick match. And it's really good. I don't know. The feud was awesome. It's one of the highlights of 93 for sure.
Oh, yeah. And
in any company.
In this first match, what happened, I know they were fighting outside, and I think Vader went to splash him, and Vader, like, splashed the guardrail and knocked it over, and Cactus Jack then got in the ring and got the count-out victory. That's how it ended.
Yes, yes.
And then Vader cut a promo, like, right afterwards, because I think he considered it an embarrassment to lose to Cactus Jack, because at the time, he wasn't, you know, I don't think he was thought of as, like, the top guys, like, maybe a Sting or somebody like that, because he'd been low-level guy for so long, and I think he snapped because it was such an embarrassment that he'd lose to, you know, a guy that, like, I guess many don't even consider to be a wrestler in some cases. So
it'd be like, what would be like an example for someone nowadays? Maybe like who's like a lower level guy that's like in the same position Cactus Jack was, you know, just has matches. I don't know, like Chavo or something.
I don't know, maybe somebody like Sheamus, and maybe I don't know, maybe like Evan Bourne.
Yes, yes, that's what it is. That's what it is. Yeah, like Evan Bourne, like, you know, Evan Bourne. Yeah, that's it. Like, you know, that's how it was then, because Evan Bourne is like the internet hero, and Cactus Jack was like the dirt sheet hero, you know,
yeah.
And him beating. Yeah, that's very good. It's very good. All right, so we have that, and then I think it's and Davey Boy Smith is here too. I forgot to mention that. I think Davey Boy Smith also wrestled. Wasn't there a thing where he was also wrestling All Japan as well? But WCW had a deal with New Japan. I could have sworn that was the case.
I can't really remember. I know he was gone for like a stretch here, where he wasn't on TV, and maybe he was in Japan doing some Japan dates. So.
Yes, and some of these house show matches that you see, like there's actually a house show where Scorpio teamed up with the Barbarian, and just to imagine that team, that'd be so great, because he's like, I wish we would have really gotten a TV version of the Barbarian as a face, because he really wasn't, like, it was only, when he was there as a face, it was a very short amount of time.
Yeah, and he's a guy, he's one of those guys, big guys, I always liked him, I always thought he was, I thought he was a pretty good worker, to be honest with you. You know, just a big powerhouse, and I love that big boat he always used to have. The boat was awesome.
Yes, and around this time, in 93, they debuted in New York City for the first time, did a house show.
Yeah, and I think it was in the Paramount Theater that's, like, right next to Madison Square Garden, so they put it on TV, like, to run at Madison Square Garden, you know, they weren't, because, you know, WWF has the exclusive rights to that.
Yeah.
And I think it was...
Yeah, like...
I think it was probably a terrible... I think it was a terrible show.
From what I've heard, at least, like, what I've read, it doesn't look like a good show. It really does not at all look like a good show.
Ric Flair was advertised for being there, but he couldn't... He had, like, a... Like plane issues or something like that, and he couldn't make it. And he was like one of the big draws of the show.
Yeah, and well, the thing is, it's like New York's considered like a WWE town or WWF at the time town.
Yeah,
but I mean, they would go to Baltimore a lot, and Baltimore's not that far from. I mean, they went up to like they went to the east like sometimes, but it was mainly Baltimore. Some of their bigger shows from the year before were in Baltimore.
Yeah,
so,
I mean, you know, before in the Crockett years, you know, a place like Baltimore and Philadelphia, those were huge towns for them.
Yes, it was.
Especially Philadelphia, because they were more of that type of wrestling, you know, it was more like blood and guts kind of stuff at the time in Crockett. So, And Baltimore hosted all those Great American Bashes all those years.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Yeah, it was, wasn't it?
You were talking about David Boy Smith in Japan. I'm looking at the result from like April 7th, where in all Japan, Steve Williams defeated David Boy Smith. Actually, that probably was a hell of a match.
Yeah, I'm sure. I'm sure that probably was really good. All right, they the film is TV into April, and what are they building up? What are they going towards? What show?
Well, they're starting like the build towards Slamboree. Reunion in May. They're starting the big build up for that because, you know, it's the thing where they're bringing back all the legends. Like, I just remember one week it was weird because they bring in Black Jake Mulligan and he's doing commentary with like Tony Schiavone and it was pretty terrible. And the Assassin was coming back and stuff like that. And I just remember during this time it was weird because like they would do something like with a WCW executive committee and like the head of it would be Greg Gagne.
Yeah,
yeah.
That
was so weird.
I see at the time it took me rewatching it to like realize all the stuff. Like back when I was a kid, even watching like the Macho Man's wedding, in 91 SummerSlam. And J.J. Dillon was there at the wedding. And, like, I would have never thought to even think that that was anybody at the time. I thought it was a guy, you know?
Yeah.
And they were doing the Computer Contenders Challenge. You remember
that?
That's
just what I was going to get to. They had a thing where they used a computer, and they put all the contenders for different championships and into the computer, and the computer figures up which guy gets the title shot every week on Worldwide Wrestling. And I remember Too Cold Scorpio and Marcus Bagwell got a shot at the Hollywood, which I thought was weird because wouldn't you think automatically Steamboat and Douglas would be the top contenders? But anyway.
Well, see, Alexandra York had left her computer backstage, and they took advantage of that. So that's what was going on there.
I thought that Alexandra York thing was so silly. You know, you can put.
I loved it.
It was funny. Kind of, it was in a kind of a cheesy way, and she put all of stuff in the computer and like tell them how to beat him, and then they do like. I remember they had Mike Rotunda doing the Michael Wall Street thing, and they. Like he's going to beat him in like under 8 minutes and 25 seconds or something like that, which kind of tells you he's going to win the match. So,
yes. one also like kind of weird thing about that, maybe the reason I didn't see it being goofy was like, you know, we probably have like a 10-year age difference. So I, you know, at the time I was 8 years old. So to me, like this computerized, like, team was cool. It was cool that they, like wow, how'd they do it, those sons of bitches? Like, you know, I wouldn't say that. They're, like, you know, dorks or jerks or something. But, yeah, I don't know. It was really cool. And I liked the Computer Contenders Challenge. That was actually, when I was, like, really young, like, I stayed at my grandparents a lot, so I watched, like, a lot of Saturday nights. But up until, like, about the middle of 93, It was actually probably around this time, actually. That's when we got cable. So I watched a lot of the, like, my family didn't have cable, like, when I was really young. So I would go to my grandparents most Saturdays to watch Saturday Night, almost every Saturday. I can't even, like, remember a time where I didn't. But, I would mainly watch Worldwide and stuff like that because it was on the syndicated channels, like Channel 50 in Chicago. And it was just really cool. Like I loved that show. And they also, there's a team that was called the Hardliners. And this was like I think in like 91 maybe or 92. I don't know.
Yeah.
Like it had to be 91 because we didn't talk about it.
The Hardliners.
Who were they?
That was Dick Slater and Dick Murdoch. I remember.
Yeah,
Remember they had that match with. Steiners against like Jose and Chono at that Clash of the Champions in June, and afterwards they came out and attacked the Steiners and injured Rick Steiner and injured his arm, like worked injured his arm, but I think then Rick Scott Steiner ended up, you remember tearing his tricep or his bicep or something, and you remember he was out for like 6 months.
Yeah, I always liked them. They were pretty short lived too.
Yeah, they were only there. They never even did anything because when they vacated the tag title, I said, well, obviously these two guys are going to end up winning the championships, but they didn't.
I remember that they had the belts. They carried the belts around for a while because they had to have. Because I looked it up eventually, and they never won the titles. But I swear, I remember as a child, I remember them having the titles. And then I thought I read somewhere that they were holding the titles up or something like that. All right, so Saturday night, end of April.
Let's go through the rest of these challenge tournament matches real quick while we're on the.
Okay, let's do that first.
We had Paul Orndorff, he beat Shane Douglas in a TV title match. You had Barry Windham, he beats Johnny B. Badd in an NWA title match. And Big Van Vader defeated Ricky Steamboat by count out in a world title match. And the other title match was Rick Rude and Dustin Rhodes, and this is where they did the double pin finish.
Yes.
At the end of it, and like both guys, it was like, you know, typical like back suplex thing, and I guess a ref got bumped, and another ref was out there, but as the ref's counting one side of the shoulders, then the other ref starts counting the other, so, and both guys, I guess, both had a shoulder down, and both had a shoulder up, so, in the end, they announced Rude as the champion, but in the end, they held the title up.
Yeah, which they were building up for a title match between the two, right?
Yeah, eventually they'd have like the Iron Man Challenge match.
Yes, which is
a big blast.
All right, and I think that's it for the computer thing, right?
Yeah.
All right, so. We're at the end of April, finally. So, but it only took us 17 minutes to get through it, so you should be proud of us, everybody.
And we should do the follow-up to the Cactus Jack thing for the rematch.
Yeah, go ahead.
Yeah, it was the following week they had the rematch. And it's basically the same typical match that they had the week before, you know, just both beating the crap at each other. And then at the end, Harley Race starts pulling the mats up, and Big Van Vader goes for a power bomb, and he picks him up and then drops him, and he's just right on the back of his head, and he's just, his eyes are open, but nobody's there. And legitimately, I believe nobody was there because I believe he was really, like, just knocked out from it. And so Vader gets the count out win. And then they did this whole motion, like dramatic deal with getting the ambulance out there and getting him on the stretcher. And I thought the coolest thing about this whole thing, they really kind of sold it as really being like a big deal, is Jesse Ventura, the heel commentator, rode in the ambulance with him to the hospital.
Yeah,
I thought that was so cool.
Yeah, it was, because he was the heel, but he's like genuinely concerned for the guy, you know, and he wasn't like a joking heel. I mean, he was a pretty big, you know, heel commentator, and that really did put it over. And I remember thinking, because like around that time, I'm figuring out wrestling's fake, you know. Sadly, it took me that long, but you know, around that time, like 9 or 10, you know, like you kind of know, but you're not sure of it, you know. And then when you see stuff like that, where, oh my God, like he's the bad guy, but he's riding with him. This must be serious, you know? Like,
yeah.
It reminded me of
96. You remember when the NWO attacked all those guys and speared Ray into the trailer?
Oh yes.
And I think it was Arn Anderson and Marcus Bagwell was like knocked out, and they're tending to all these guys, and.
Yeah, yes.
They put like Bagwell and Arn Anderson in the same ambulance, and Ric Flair and Sting rode to the hospital with him after they had just been in a match together. I thought that was pretty cool.
Well, it was, yeah, that's also funny because, like, why the hell would Sting ride there with fucking Mark Bagwell? Who gives a shit, you know?
Well, that had been, like, his protege, you know, in those early years.
Yeah, those early years, but, I mean, it had been forever. It had been forever,
yeah.
It seemed like. Maybe his calf implant exploded because he wanted big calves like Sting. All right,
yeah,
so...
And plus they had taken out Scotty Riggs in that attack, so he couldn't have, like, ridden in there with him. So, I guess, well, they did that.
Yeah, that's true. So Paul Orndorff's a TV champ, and he's, like, doing this thing where he says that the TV title could be... should only be up for grabs the first 10 minutes of the match. Because he only wanted to be for 10 minutes because he thought 15 minutes was too long. And so he was trying to survive the title for 10 minutes to make it shorter, which is genius heel thing. And they're really, really, you know, putting it in their heads how serious the injury the Cactus Jack is. They did, like, an interview with... what was his name? Chuck Cache, was it?
Yeah, he was the trainer at the time.
Yeah. They did an interview with him on Saturday night. And, you know, they didn't know where Cactus was and all this stuff. And they're doing these promos, like you said, with the assassin. I think it's the Flair for the Gold, right? Does it start here?
Yeah, the Flair for the Gold was starting around this time. Some of these are so goofy. He interviewed Johnny B. Bad.
They wore 50s garb.
Oh, yeah. Johnny B. Bad, you know, he's supposed to be like Little Richard and like the 50s and stuff like that. And
yeah.
and Flair's there, orange there, and a leather jacket. And so it ends up
Arn
with...
Arn looks so damn cool. I don't care what anybody says. Arn was cool looking at that thing with Johnny B. Bad. That one was great.
And it ended up with they brought some girls out, and the segment ended with some 50s music playing. They're doing like it's a sock hopper, and they're all dancing. I thought.
Oh gosh. All right, so they have Vader did Flair for the Gold. And they're building towards Vader versus Davey Boy Smith. So they're pushing Davey Boy Smith right to the top. Right, you know, he's only been there for a couple of months, and they're obviously like gonna put him in a program with Vader because the Cactus Jack thing, they did the injury. I think Cactus was injured, wasn't he? I think
yeah.
He really was injured. Yeah, so
yeah,
they need to get him off TV.
Yeah, and they when they helped with the whole thing, you know, it was a Dusty Rhodes' idea, and he said, we're take you off TV for 6 months. So he was supposed to be gone. I think he was gone about 4 or 5 months, but yeah.
And there's this legendary tag team that's on the Saturday night. If anybody doesn't believe me, you can go back and watch it. It's in April, the end of April, 1993. The Junkyard Dog teaming up with Jim the Anvil Neidhart. Like,
oh,
the only
yeah.
battles they have is, like, whose belly is bigger at the time. Which, they're both
and,
giant, they both had giant bellies in 1983.
Yeah, and they were doing this thing with, I think they were selling Jim Neidhart strap-on goatees at the merchandise stands.
Yes,
you know,
yes.
I remember they brought one out and put it, like, on Tony Schiavone 1 week. It's just this little strap-on long goatee.
But like we said on the last show, it kind of stinks that they really really kind of let things go on this after Bill Watts, because there's so many like back and forth matches in the Watts era, but now it's just jobbers. I mean, honestly, just jobbers. Scott Norton showed up in 93 for a short time. And this was also the debut of the one and only Colonel Robert Parker. And I remember at the time thinking, like, who the hell is this guy? But, I mean, thank God he showed up in WCW because he was so great. Everything involving Robert Parker was great. And even when he was Tennessee Lee later, I loved the guy. His voice, he sounded like such a freaking like an old time Southern promoter. You know what I mean? And he had, oh gosh, I mean, it was just so great that, I'm trying to think of, like, he eventually brought in Ming with him. That was way later though, wasn't it?
Yeah, that was in. That was in 1994. Ming came in.
Okay. Yeah,
I just remember. I just remember Colonel Parker. Every week he for the interview said, "Well, hello, Tony. I offered you your cigar this week. Here you go," because he'd always be giving him a cigar every time he started the interview.
Yeah. So great.
And
so
he was doing the deal where he's looking for. He's on the lookout for somebody to manage, and he starts making overtures for what God knows what reason to Van Hammer. Every week, like, he started making overtures to him, and Van Hammer just flat out told him, "No, I don't want anything to do with you." And then later in the next few weeks after Van Hammer's matches, Parker comes out, he's still mad about it, and he starts bringing a stretcher out for him. Says, this is what's going to be in your future, and I know exactly what was coming when he brought the stretcher out.
Yeah.
Because it would lead to the Slambury show coming up.
Yes, they're growing, they're building to the Slambury. What was the story with Jesse Ventura not wanting to be around Blackjack Mulligan?
I don't know if there was really a story to it. I think they just did it to get Blackjack some time on TV because of the Legends thing coming up, and so just to have him there with Tony. And I do know that Jesse was doing Demolition Man at the time.
Demolition Man.
He was, yes, he was filming Demolition Man with Sylvester Stallone and Wesley Snipes. And I even had an interview with Sylvester Stallone 1 week with Jesse Ventura on Saturday night. And this was why, maybe why he didn't work the Slamboree show, because you remember it was Tony and Larry Zbysko.
Yes, it was. It was. All right, there's a short interview, we go into May. May starts. There's it's a short edition of Saturday Night, and there's not much that really happened on the show, because they're building up. They're really building up to, the Slamboree show, the Legend show, and Stone Cold, or at the time Stunning Steve, sorry, and Brian Pillman, they're building kind of to a thing with Flair and Arn, because they wanted it's gonna be aired. When was it gonna be aired? The middle of May, Brian Pillman, I remember. Sorry.
Was it the Flair for the Gold thing you're talking about?
Yes, yeah, Flair for the Gold. And Brian Pillman, I remember, he asked Ric Flair for an autograph for his grandma, which is so funny.
Whole segment was, like, one of the best all-time segments. And I really think that's where Austin and Pillman really, really became big stars from that. Because they're just so tremendous in that. Yeah, he says, "I want to get your autograph, but mind you, it's not for me. It's for my grandmother, and she's a real big fan." And
that's so great.
And he said, "You got any of those robes with those pterodactyl feathers? From 100 years ago when you were in your prime, hanging around?" And Steve Austin says, hey, that's an awesome statue you got sitting over there. He says, this is really cool. And Pillman says, Steve, that's Double A, that's not a statue. And Double A gives his look on his face. And they start talking about getting back in the ring, and then Flair stands up and says, well, maybe we should talk about this a little bit more seriously. And he starts taking his watch off, and Arn's already over there. He's into it. And then they said, just calm down. We'll talk about this over a drink. We'll get you Geritol on the rocks. And then Flair fucking flipped out. Said, Geritol on the rocks? You're on my show. And then it ended. And it was so awesome.
That was. And in the control center for the show, Kazuki Sasaki was back also.
Yeah.
That's just another thing I'm noting. But the match announced for Sting for Slamboree was, because they're building up Scott Norton, because Scott Norton's there, and he's only there for a really short time, because he was scheduled to be Sting's opponent for the pay-per-view at Slamboree. But obviously that never happened.
Yeah, that never happened.
I don't know.
I believe held him up for money before the show. What happened?
Yeah. Because they ended up signing Nails.
The prisoner.
His name in WCW was the prisoner.
They built him from like Green Bay, Wisconsin, which I think was like an inside Rio, because that's where he like attached Vince McMahon. He got fired.
Yeah. which that is funny. The story behind that, if people that don't know, he like tried beating the shit out of Vince McMahon, and like afterwards he tried saying that Vince like tried like fucking him, right? Like or tried.
Yeah, he tried to grab his balls or something like that, and that's why he attacked him, and nobody believed him, and. He testified in the big steroid trial the next year in 1994, and he was completely discredited, and even to the point where, like, the lawyer, like, for Vince says, sir, do you have a vendetta against Vince McMahon? And of course, being the stupid person Nails was, he said, yes, I do. So, completely discredited anything he had to say on the stand, so.
I'm trying to think of where we're.
This is where it looks like WCW is getting like kind of WWE-ish because you bring this prisoner character in. We're just so weird.
Yes, they bring the prisoner character in, and they already have like some pretty goofy guys, and like this era, I don't even want to say era. Like it was like this period of time. For a couple of months, it was really boring because they spent so much time talking about the legends. And, like, these were legends that were big in the South for the most part. So, like, I mean, I didn't give a shit about Thunderbolt Patterson and stuff like that. Having Baron Von Raschke on a show and Ivan Koloff. I mean, they were seriously, like, building up these matches. Like, people cared to see them. And, like, honestly, no one did. And, they had a cool backstage segment with a backstage. It was like kind of like a little vignette thing of Jesse Ventura and Sylvester Stallone, on the set of Demolition Man. And I remember they aired that probably four times. It started off on a Saturday night though. They aired it on Worldwide and stuff like because it was a big deal. It was a big deal to have Sylvester Stallone on the WCW show, even though was a little taped vignette thing. And they're trying to build up Davey Boy Smith, and this is where like it's such a mistake because instead of giving him like contenders, you know, to beat, like he should have been beating, you know, like bigger names, you know what I mean? And he was just beating jobbers like Pat Rose, and you know he should have been beating guys at least mid-carders, you know, like. You know, one half, like, he could have beat Brian Pillman or something. And it wouldn't have meant anything because Brian Pillman's a tag team wrestler. It wouldn't have meant anything, but it would have been big for him. But they didn't do that. They didn't do that. And
I think the only really appearance he made at this time was Remember when Vader was doing like these weekly open challenges to people, and it
yes.
mostly ended up being just like job guys that he'd destroy, and then Davey Boy Smith comes in and because he wants to accept the open challenge, and so you know they had like the big brawl to go right into the pay per view.
Yes, and like I believe he was doing tours of Japan, because or something, because he wasn't all over TV. They would talk about him a lot on TV, but he didn't make a lot of appearances.
Yeah.
And so they're building up for the show. Slamboree, of course, and it's tons of jobber matches, and they're really not announcing as many matches. They have matches like out there, but like I mean they keep getting changed, and they did announce actually that Nails was going to be in WCW to wrestle Sting, and they actually called him Nails at first.
Yeah, they did it like the day before, because remember when they were doing live cut-ins to like the Slam Feast.
Yes.
Deal that they were having like the night before at Turner, at like CNN Center, with it was just like a dinner with all the legends and stuff like that. I think that's where that happened, yeah. And I think they probably got an angry phone call from somebody.
Another noteworthy thing was the Fabulous Moolah was actually interviewed on a Saturday night, which was a really kind of a big deal at the time, because it's a big deal now even to think about it, because she was always, and I mean always, associated with Vince McMahon and WWF. I mean, her entire career, it seemed like she was with them. It's kind of like almost like the Andre thing where, you know, because Andre was considered like a permanent WWF guy, but then his last appearance before he died was on a Clash of the Champions. So,
yeah.
You know, it's crazy. It's crazy. And what's also crazy is like to think that Andre actually wrestled the match after that, which boggles my mind. You know, even though
Japan,
he probably
huh?
didn't do much.
Was it in Japan?
He has a Japanese match. He teamed up with Giant Baba somewhere. And there's a we could probably cover it since we're in 93, that we probably should talk about that. 93, the first 3 months, there's three like major deaths like in 3 months in a row. It started off in January. January, I believe, was Andre the Giant. He went to wherever, I think it was like Grenoble or France or somewhere, right?
Yeah.
He went to go to his dad's funeral, and the day or a couple days after, he actually died in his sleep, which, you know, he was a fairly young guy. But I mean, he looked really old. He was only in his 40s.
Yeah,
and,
he had that.
I remember
he had that. I can't even pronounce acromegaly or something like that. There was like a disease where he probably lived a little bit longer than he should.
Yes. And then the next month, I believe, was Kerry Von Erich. Was in February.
Yeah, Kerry Von Erich. He was on probation for forging prescriptions. So of course he went out and forged another prescription. Probation's revoked.
And he got caught, and he knew he was
going
to jail.
Yeah, he was going to prison, and
so he showed up at his dad's house.
Yeah, he went like to his ex-wife and he said, "This is gonna happen. But if there's a chance for us, then I'll do the time. But if there's a chance for us to get back together when I get out, is there gonna be a chance?" He told him no. So, and he was like, he said it was weird because like the days preceding that, he's telling everybody how much he loves them, and he went down to the Sportatorium, and then, you know, they were doing some kind of global stuff, and like guys like Akbar and stuff like that were there, and he said, "I just want you guys to know how much I love you." And the next day he went to his father's brother's ring.
Well, he called his brother that day and told him that he was going to kill himself. His last surviving brother, Kevin.
Yeah.
And he told me he was going to kill himself. And Kevin tried calling, at least this is according to Heroes of World Class, his brother tried calling his dad to warn him that this is what's going to happen. And so he went there and borrowed a gun. I believe it was a gun that he actually bought his dad, right?
Yeah, it was a gun that he actually bought his dad. He said he got the gun and told his dad he's going to go take a drive and do some thinking. Now, when all these tragedies happen, if my son has gone and borrowed one of my guns and said he's driving out on the ranch to do some thinking, I mean, what's going to pop in your mind?
Yeah. Yeah, but I know what you mean. And then in March, which you think all these deaths are gone, you know what I mean? There's two in a row. But then in March, Dino Bravo, who after he left wrestling, he was still doing like a small-time wrestling, I think even a little bit of promoting.
Yeah.
And Rick Martel says that he was trying to get him back in the WWF. And Dino kind of said, oh, hey, I got my own thing going on here. Well, he got into some bad, like, tobacco trade, and people showed up and shot him.
Yeah, he was in the black market in Canada is, like, because of the high taxes on cigarettes, it's, like, a big, really big deal. And I think he ran afoul of somebody and sitting there in his easy chair and it wasn't, I don't know if they shot him through the windows or if they were actually in the house, because I think maybe it was intimated that maybe he knew who they were. And anyway, he just shot to death in his easy chair. His daughter and his wife were at like a dance recital for her that night, and they came back and they found him.
Which is horrible.
Terrible. And I don't know if it was ever solved. I don't think it was ever solved. I don't think they ever solved the crime, so.
Oh, gosh. So, we have...
At least he died from something other than wrestling, I guess you'd say.
Yes, yes. So before we even have Slamboree, they record a show for the end of May. It's for the end of May, and we'll talk about Slamboree first, and then we'll talk about the show after Slamboree.
Okay, real quick though on this this Slam Feast thing that they had right before. It was the night before Slamboree. They were having all the legends there, and there was this weird thing. Like Don Morocco and Baron Von Raschke and Ivan Koloff like bumped into Jim Brunzell like in the hallway or something, and Morocco starts saying something about, we still got an issue from something that happened in 1975. And I just, that's so funny. That was so funny. Just, okay, there's an issue from 1975 that has never been settled, so. Here it is, like, over 15 years later, and you're going to settle the thing. Okay. I just thought that was hilarious.
Yeah. Yeah, so we have, so they're built, they, one day's notice, mind you, they build up a match for Slamboree, okay? And it's Don Morocco, Superfly Jimmy Snuka, and Dick Murdoch fought Blackjack Mulligan, Jim Brunzell, and Wahoo McDaniel. And it was a no contest. And a horrible match as well.
Oh, yeah.
Then Bob Armstrong was supposed to team up with Thunderbolt Patterson. But Brad Armstrong substituted, which is so unfair for the other guys, Baron Von Raschke and Ivan Koloff. Because Brad Armstrong is like 35 years old and in shape. And, you know, they're old as shit. So I remember thinking, like, wow, that's kind of messed up. And
that probably actually made the match better.
Yeah, of course. Yeah, of course it did. Of course it did. But
it did fit just because it's Bob's son. So you would think that, you know, it kind of makes sense for him to be thrown in there.
Oh yeah, I know. Then there was like a 15-minute time limit draw between Dory Funk Jr. and Nick Bockwinkel, and it was a good match. Like, you know, for their age, like it was good. You know, it wasn't like depressing to see them or anything. I always thought it was really good. And Orndorff.
And it's about to expire, and Gene Kaniski comes in and I think kicks Nick Bockwinkel, and the ref tells him to get out, and the time limit still expires, so like with a disqualification or something. I thought that was weird.
Yeah, it was. They had a tag title match. Well, no, we'll actually get to that. Rude and Orndorff beat Dustin Rhodes and Kintsugi Sasaki, and it was just a match. There was nothing special
about
it.
This match actually was set up because Sasaki was originally in the Computer Challenge Tournament. He's the one that got picked to face Dustin Rhodes. And Rick Rude attacked him, so Rick Rude got the match. So
yeah.
That's why the tag match is taking place.
No, I know why it happened. Then there was Steve Austin and Brian Pillman beat Dos Hombres, which was supposed to be, you're supposed to believe that it's Ricky Steamboat and Shane Douglas. But he quit. He quit the company.
Yeah.
So, and the funny thing about it was like, Ricky Steamboat said like, yeah, you know, like it's good luck for us to wear masks. But
yeah,
I mean,
we've got a psychological advantage.
Yes. Yes.
That's how he put it. Yeah.
Then they had Barry Windham and Arn Anderson had a match.
Well, real
quick,
back to this tag match, it ended up being Ricky Steamboat and Tom Zink, and Tom Zink was under the mask. And of course, during the climax of the match, Steamboat of course takes his mask off, showed that he's not the one getting beat. So,
yeah, which was very funny, and burying. It was Tom Zink. It wasn't Brett Armstrong.
No, it wasn't Brad Armstrong. It was Tom Zink. I could tell it was Tom Zink just from how he was wrestling in the ring. And then he even said so on Observer Live like 10 years ago when he was on. That's who it was.
All right. Excellent. All right. So we had Barry Windham and Arn Anderson. And the matchup was, from what I remember, much too short for what it could have been.
Yeah, it was a decent match. I mean, Barry Windham got busted open during the match, and those two always have great, great matches. It was just really short, I think.
Yeah, and they had a crappy main event of Davey Boy Smith and Vader. For some reason, they just did not click. And there was a horrible finish where Vader, he hit Davey Boy Smith with a chair. And it just wasn't a good finish for a pay-per-view main event especially.
I always hate that when that happens. You got the pay-per-view main event and it's in a disqualification or something. And you would think Davey Boy with his power and Vader, you know, Vader was always one of those big guys. He'll go up for some guys, like for suplexes and stuff like that. He wasn't like the lumbering guys like say a King Kong Bundy or somebody like that just wouldn't want to do that kind of stuff. He would go up. I mean, I remember David Boy gave him that big vertical suplex in this match. You know, he was always the one with the delayed vertical suplex. And so.
Yeah.
And Vader was always one of those good big guys that let guys work with him and would go up for stuff. So.
All right. So they actually taped this before Slamboree, but it aired after. Colonel Parker finally revealed who his mystery man is that was going to, you know, declare war on WCW, if you will. And it was the returning Sid, which Sid had left in 91 because Vince McMahon promised him that he'd be main eventing a WrestleMania, and that's what he wanted to do. And Sid, for some reason, just didn't work out in the WWF. Like, I have no idea why. It just didn't end up working out for them. And so he went back to WCW to be, you know, managed by Colonel Parker. And this is right when they're starting to build up a tag match for the June pay-per-view. I think it was the June pay-per-view, June or July.
Beach Blast in July.
Beach Blast. And so it's going to be Davey Boy Smith teaming up with Sting to face Sid Vicious and Big Van Vader. And
the Masters of the Powerbomb.
The Masters of the Powerbomb, which is an awesome team. And it's crazy to think that, like, you know, that's their team name, but it was. It really was. And they had this vignette, which was the best of the vignettes, in my opinion. All right, so it starts off with Sting and Davey Boy Smith. And this might be jumping ahead a bit, but it's not jumping ahead much. Sting and Davey Boy Smith are somewhere on the Gulf of Mexico, I believe it was. And Sting and Davey Boy Smith are literally playing volleyball with children.
Orphans, as they were referred to. I think they were called orphans.
Yeah, they're playing volleyball with some orphans in the Gulf of Mexico when all of a sudden Sid and Vader show up wearing their wrestling outfits, I believe. to challenge them to this match. But first, Harley Race and Rob Parker offer them two tickets to retirement. Apparently, you need a ticket to retire. you know, they get out, they retire with these tickets, apparently. And Sting and Davey Boy, they consider it, you know, oh, no, you know, like, it cuts to the kids, and the kids are all sad and depressed, you know, like, oh, no, our heroes are going to retire, you know, we're going to be orphans forever. And then all of a sudden, like, they say no. And, you know, like, the kids are like, yay! And they're like, oh, you made a big mistake. But while this is happening, for some reason, I think Sting and Davey Boy got there via boat, I guess, because there's a boat park. Well, that little son of a bitch, Cheatham, that's in all those other vignettes, swims under the boat, and all of a sudden, for no reason at all, the boat blows up. And, you know, which, number one, WWE should have done this because how dangerous, you know, even if it didn't really blow up, you know what I mean? And I think it did, though. With all those children around, why the fuck would you blow up a boat? You know what I mean? It's so stupid.
Well, the thing about it was Sting had gone over to the boat at this time while Davey Boy was still with the kids, and I guess, I don't know how he knew something. Maybe he saw Cheatham running back, you know, to whatever boat Harley and them were on. And so Sting's going up to, like, start up the boat or something, and Davey Boy runs over there and grabs him right out of the way, and then the boat explodes. So they're trying to kill Sting.
Yeah, this is so, so hilarious. Might as well, to kind of break the, you know, over and over of us telling stories, let's go ahead and take a single call. We have area code 951. What's going on?
Not much, man. It went to ECW. Like, they're not playing anymore. Did McMahon shut that down because his money was going low or something?
What? Pardon?
ECW, you know, there used to be WWF and ECW and all that, but McMahon owned...
ECW?
Yeah. What happened to that?
Oh, by the way, what's your name?
David.
Hey, David. Where are you from?
California.
All right, David from California. All right, ECW was, yes, it was bought by Vince McMahon.
Oh, that sucked. Because ECW was the best wrestling I ever seen, because I don't know how to get in WCW, because DirecTV doesn't show me all the good wrestling channels and shit.
Yep. All right, man, is there anything you want to ask about WCW 1993?
Yeah, the Sting was pretty good in that, man. He had it going
yep.
this he losing it all, and Kurt Angle thinks he did bad back in the days when he was trying to fight Sting. I said
oh,
Sting
back when Kurt Angle was... Yeah,
yeah,
when Kurt Angle was in WCW, it was crazy, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, I remember that distinctly. All right, man, well, we're going to go ahead and continue on. I appreciate you calling in.
All right, thank you.
Thanks. Okay, moving on. We have so Sid is there. The matches that they're building up for the pay per view. Awesome! Another thing that's so great was the most racist gimmick possibly ever. Yoshi Kwan started in WCW in 1993. And who was Yoshi Khan? Or Yoshi Kwan,
he was,
sorry.
Chris Champion.
Chris Champion. A Southern man, correct?
Yeah, he was in, he was in Crockett. He was in the New Breed with Sean Royal. They were a tag team there.
Yeah, so, but he's supposed to be a Japanese man. And... They tried making him look so Japanese, and it was
like
so great. Like the whole, yes. Oh gosh. So Sid's there. You know, let's blaze through to get that pay per view. Sid's there. Dustin Rhodes is doing his own thing as well. You know, singles matches, building up for his eventual match with Rick Rude. Sting and Davey Boy are—they're showing them teaming up. They wrestle, you know, a couple different guys.
They called them the superpowers.
Yes, they were the superpowers. They wrestled Shanghai Pierce and Tex Lessinger, the future Godwins. Kensuke Sasaki is, doing a little bit of stuff with Rick Rude at the time. Larry Zbysko is doing a lot of commentary at this time as well. And this is when you had talked about before, Lord Steven Regal showed up. Well,
yeah.
Sir William did that thing where he said Lord Steven Regal was showing up, the next week.
No,
it was
somebody else that came out. It wasn't Sir William at first. It was somebody else, that came out just as, like old time,
like how Jeeves eventually looked.
Yeah, Chives, as Dusty Rhodes would say.
Oh yeah, it was. and their undercard was were so many people there that they wouldn't wrestle on every show, because there's still Johnny B. Badd, who's still around. another really funny thing was. There was a WCW event at this time in Seymour, Indiana, and I, know a lot about Indiana, obviously. Seymour is, like, the smallest of towns. I mean, literally, the population of that town is probably 1,000, and the fact that they actually went there and put on a show there makes me laugh so hard that there was even a show there. And they had such random, it seemed there was no rhyme or reason for these house shows of where they were at. And, sometimes you'd see them on the East or whatever, but then there's other times where, you wouldn't really see what they were doing. But they actually had, at this time, they were trying the whole A and B shows, and you could tell. Because the B shows would obviously, main event with, the Junkyard Dog, and they'd have, a crappy women's match and a midget match. But at the you know, the A shows that they would, you know, attempt to have or whatever, it would be Davey Boy Smith, Vader. And actually, one of these shows in 93, it was in Michigan, Sabu was actually on the show. So it was a one-off thing. But they would...
They were doing not the crowds this time were really like bad. I'm looking at one right.
They were
here.
Low. Like, I mean, the hundreds.
Philadelphia, Pennsylvania, at the Civic Center, 600 people.
Yes, which is, I mean, think about that. Think about 600 people. Spartanburg, South Carolina, 225 people. Can you even imagine that? But I mean, like, you know, if there's a main event of Junkyard Dog and Dick Slater, I don't blame them for only. For only drawing that much, you know. And honestly, one of the matches on that card, Johnny B. Badd versus Michael Hayes, that went 20 minutes, I would love to see.
Oh, God.
All right, so they're doing, they're building up these matches, and they also have introduced Paul Roma as the Horseman.
God, yeah, we didn't even talk about that from the Slamboree thing. It was supposed to be Tully Blanchard, Ole, Arn, and Rick, and Tully, they just couldn't get the contract done before, so they bring in Paul Roma. And, I mean, when they announced Paul Roma, I think you could hear some crickets chirping.
Yeah, of course, because it's horrible.
And not that he was a terrible wrestler. I mean, he was good. He just wasn't for the Horseman. Should not have been in the Horseman at all.
I mean, it is that he's not a good wrestler. I mean, that's for me. I mean, and to me, he wasn't that bad, but he really wasn't that good. I mean, to be a Horseman, that was supposed to be like the biggest thing ever, you know, like that's the most elite group that you could possibly be in. And so there's a clash coming up, and
they're building
yes,
up
to,
they announce Ric Flair's coming back for he and Arn Anderson against Hollywood Blondes in a 2-out-of-3-fall match for the tag titles. And this was when they did the great Flair for the Old segment with they brought out
Steve Austin as Flair.
Pillman was supposed to be Flair. He was just as Flair, and it was Pillman. He said, "I got because you know PC was the maid and it's Flair for the Gold." He says, "I got Foo Foo," and. All you guys get ready. Here comes Foo Foo, and it's like this overweight woman in a maid's outfit. And so then he brings out Steve Austin as the guest, and he's trying to interview him, and he like keeps like falling asleep during the like because he's so old, he's just falling asleep during the interview. And he said, "Well, I need my pills," and so he's got a mouthful of these pills. And then he starts falling asleep while he's taking the pills, and Austin slaps him on the back and says, "Wake up!" And all the pills go flying everywhere. And I mean, then it was Arn Anderson came out and said, "Arn, look at that stomach. It looks like he should be roasting over into open flame." He says, "You want a party? You want a barbecue?" And then he just knocked the shit out of him and hit the ring. He was beating the hell out of him. And, of course, Tillman hits the ring. He had a cane with him, broke it over Arn's back, and then Flair shows up, and then the heels run off. But great segment.
It really was a great segment. And one thing we're kind of forgetting, this is the time where they're looking for Cactus Jack. They're doing, they go to his house, and they won't interview his real wife. They interview this dumpy-looking lady to be his wife. And
his wife is hot. His wife's hot.
Yeah, she's still hot to this day. But, you know, she's this, you know, super hot chick. And so they have this dumpy chick. And she says that, wasn't it like, it's either his or his son's middle name was Cleveland? And they're like, oh, because it's like this corny news reporter, you know. Like, they're trying to find Cactus Jack. As opposed to, like, someone in the company, you know, they send a news reporter to apparently go find, you know, Cactus Jack, because it's like this big deal. And they tell them that he's in Cleveland. And that's where we're at right now, like right before the clash.
Well, no, remember they sent him to the hospital, to the mental hospital, because of the concussion.
That was first. His wife sent him to Cleveland. The mental hospital, I think, was first.
No, because this is why I remember the mental hospital. Because you remember they had the Rain Man guy. And they're supposed to be like...
Oh, yeah, okay, yeah.
From Rain Man, and she's asking, have you seen Cactus Jack? And she says, Cleveland. Jack definitely in Cleveland. Yes, Cleveland. Jack's in Cleveland.
Like, oh, yeah.
And then they had, like, they had somebody, like, imitating Jack Nicholson from One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest. This was horrible. This was terrible stuff.
Horribly great.
Horribly great, yeah, it was horribly great. And
all right, let's please just get to the clash. Okay, Ron Simmons is feuding with Orndorff. Orndorff's injured, so he beats Dirty Dick Slater, who is substituting for Orndorff, and Orndorff is there trying to interfere. He can't wrestle a match, and
yeah.
Regal debuts his official debut against Mark Bagwell, and he beats him with a roll up, holding the tights. And then Johnny B. Badd is doing this storyline with Max Payne. And, like, the match is about to start, but Max Payne shoots him in the face with his Badd Blaster.
Yeah,
and,
his confetti gun that he had to use. Yeah.
So then Tom Zink becomes the Johnny B. Badd White Knight, and confronts him, and then he puts him in the painkiller, and eventually the referees got him off. And I distinctly remember this clash because I watched it live, and I remember it I actually had it on tape, so I watched it over and over. And Barry Windham and Too Cold Scorpio had a really good match.
Yeah.
It really was a good match. And Michael Buffer was the announcer on this, and he was like, this is his first time in WCW, was this show. And
yep.
There was a six-man tag of Vader, Sid, and Rick Rude, and they beat Sting, Dustin Rhodes, and British Bulldog. There was like Rick Rude's carrying around this Halliburton with the U.S. title in it for some reason.
Yeah,
and
he had when he was announced as the champion, like before they held the belt up, he still had the belt, so he had it in the Halliburton briefcase.
Yeah, so no one could take it, which was awesome. It was best 2 out of 3 falls. Flair and Anderson versus Austin and Pillman. And this was pretty much the reason why Pillman and Austin ended up breaking up, was because this didn't draw very well, like, for ratings. And they blamed it on Austin and Pillman and not Flair and Arn. So this was kind of like the beginning of the end for them, was because of this main event thing. And it ended up being one fall each, and then they won the last fall by DQ, so they didn't win the tag titles. And
Barry Windham hit
Barry Windham.
Because even though it was, you know, they built up for months. Every time Windham was asked about Flair, he just would, like, abruptly end the interview. And so they built that up for, like, months and months. And finally he jumped Flair in the match. And gets him DQ'd, and then Paul Roma comes out, and they just have a big six-way brawl to end the show.
All the house show and all the small shows right now, Sid is just killing people. Like, they're giving him, like, two-minute matches, and he's just killing people. And they're also really pushing Regal. He actually got some pretty good, like, pretty good wins, like, even on TV over, like, over Tom Zink and Ricky Steamboat and Bagwell again. And, I mean, he was getting a lot of wins at the time. And
Steamboat was back as a single. He was doing the fire-breathing gimmick again.
Yes, he was. And he, like, you know, he was still over. He was still over. And Michael Hayes is, like, only doing house shows at the time. He's not really doing anything on TV. But he's there, like, if he is on TV, he's doing, like a host position, you know? And then Eaton and Benoit, I think it was their last appearance. It might have been, like, as a team, was in July, where they teamed up again to lose to Flair and Anderson. And I don't remember seeing them much after that.
Yeah, and going back to the Hollywood Blondes things real quick, they blame the rating on them. I think they used that rating to blame on them, but I think they also saw that they were how good they were getting over. And so, you know, you got some disgruntled old farts in the bag, and they're not liking that. So kind of had to nip them in the bud.
Yes, and that's honestly what happened. You know, it was more so as an excuse for anything. They put Harley Race.
The quick thing was, you know, they talked like, I think it was on one of the Austin DVDs. They said the thing on Hollywood Blonde, and you got like Dusty Rhodes talking about it was horrible how they were broken up. Well, Dusty Rhodes was like one of those guys that was in on that. So it was, you know, kind of hypocritical of him to say that. He was one of the guys.
And I around this time, which I'm almost, Bischoff's in power now, I believe. If not then, you know, right around this time. But they're, by the end of the month, you know, they're in, they're at the MG, or the, what's the MGM Studios?
It was, Universal or something like that.
Yeah. They were there filming shows.
Disney Studios, I think.
And the crazy thing about that was, like, when Bischoff came in, he must have held some sort of, like, talent initiative or something, almost like ECW, like, for the new ECW. How, all of a sudden, there's tons of new guys. There's tons. And on TV. And, like, I mean, literally, like, July is, like, a big month for debuts. And the Harlem Heat showed up with Carl Robert Parker. Yoshi Kwan was given a manager, Harley Race, to try getting him over more because he wasn't really getting over at all.
And plus Harley Race during that thing with Cactus. Cactus had some sort of little sack around his neck. I don't know what was in it, but it was like something that was real special to him, and Harley Race took it, and he was using it, you know, he was managing Yoshi Kwan because that was going to be Cactus's first opponent coming back, so it was like to get the bag back or something like that, so that's what
Yeah, what was in the bag?
I don't ever think we found out. Maybe it was a...
I don't think they ever... So, the thing that was crazy about this is they would film TV so out of order.
Oh yeah.
They wouldn't film it out of order, but they would film it so far ahead because they were trying to book these things, you know. So
this
you know,
like months
you
in
see
advance
things.
They were it was like months.
I mean, literally like 4 months in advance, there'd be TV, and they didn't care if people knew. You know what I mean? They wouldn't care that, you know, people would know and who would get over and who wouldn't. They didn't care because they were, I mean, like on these tapings that they're doing, One of the people that they're pushing really hard is the Equalizer, Dave Sullivan. And I mean, they're really pushing the guy. And he's going over on certain guys. And they also had the shittiest knockoffs. The main knockoff I'm referring to is fucking, at the time, Tatanka is really getting over, okay? I mean, he is.
Yeah.
I mean, he's a hot baby face in WWE. And, I don't even remember people not liking him. Like, even, like, internet people and, or not internet, but, like, newsletter people and all that, like, they've never really bared him all that much, you know, and, you know, I never had an issue with him.
The unbeaten streak with
him
at that time.
Yeah, and it was good. He was over like a motherfucker. Well, WCW's answer for that, because with Bischoff just wanted to compete. That's what his thing was. So they get a guy named Charlie Norris to be a fucking Indian. And he's like this kind of fat, kind of not fat Indian guy with no charisma at all. I mean, no charisma, none. Like, you know, Tatanka was like a warrior, and Charlie Norris was just like this guy that dressed up like an Indian. And he was an Indian, I believe. I mean, I think there was a shoot that he was an Indian. But I have no idea what they're even thinking. But the Nasty Boys come in, and like, you see the tapings ahead of time. You see these tapings. So you know within like 2 weeks of the Nasty Boys showing up, they recorded them like holding the tag titles already. They recorded them like having the belts. And it's insane to think that they recorded that far. I mean, this is in July, and they're already filming for, you know, Halloween weekend. I mean, honestly, this is crazy.
Yeah, I'm looking at these right now, and the very last, one of the last matches from the taping, this is July, like July 9th, 1993. And the Hollywood Blondes were already the tag team champions at this time. And they did a match with the Nasty Boys coming out with Mizzy Hyatt with the tag team championships.
Yes. And this was for Thanksgiving, around Thanksgiving.
Yeah, this was, and by like November of 1993, like on the show, Paul Orndorff was the television champion. And then Rick Steamboat comes out with the TV title belt. And by the end of the show, they have a match with WCW TV champion Lord Steven Regal. And I know, I know we all know this is like fake and stuff, but when you map out this much stuff and people get wind of it, it just really sounds kind of stupid and insulting. You know?
Yeah, it is. I mean, for the hardcore fans, that's exactly what it was. Is insulting. You know, the thing is, like, that whole entire, like, you know, they filmed 5 months, and you know what name wasn't even on there? WCW superstar Kurt Angle was not even on there. Did you see him at all?
No, I did not see him.
See. What's up with that, you know?
And they also did a thing where on one of the tapings, you'd have Barry Windham as the NWA champion. Ric Flair would then be out with the belt, and then Rick Rude would be out with the belt. I mean,
yeah.
I don't know.
All right, so there's honestly, like, it's hard to even remember that. So there's the build-up for Beach Blast, and it, to be honest, even though it was a pay-per-view, it kind of was a throwaway show, because they had these matches built up, but most of the matches, like, with exception of the main event of Sting and Davey Boy, actually the top three matches were really built up. They really built up the Ric Flair and Barry Windham match. They really built it up for months. They really built up Davey Boy Smith and Vader, Sting and Davey Boy versus Vader and Sid. And then they also built up Dustin Rhodes and Rick Rude, which they're still going with this. This feud's going on forever I mean, it feels
they,
like
they also
one-up
built up Arn and Paul Roma against Hollywood Blondes.
Yeah, I mean that thing was going. That thing was already going anyways. But
yeah.
I mean, like, and one crazy thing is like, Eric Watts was still on TV at this time. I mean, he was just around, and it seemed like he appeared like only on house shows and rarely on television. And he had a match with Regal at the show. And the thing was, as they were burying Eric Watts, was actually when he was getting a little bit better. Like, he was actually a fairly decent wrestler. And then, by the time, and then they just got rid of him. So, because I don't think he got, like, a big contract. So, the other matches we'll go ahead and go through because we're almost out of time, which I think we actually made it through another 3 months. Yeah, we have about 10 minutes left. And, yeah, we have Johnny B. Badd beat Max Payne. And he wore a mask because they're selling the thing from the Bad Blaster to the face.
Yeah.
And they're really doing a lot with that team of Scorpio and Mark Bagwell. They're also, this is kind of like that, remember we were talking about the downgrade of Ron Simmons? And Ron Simmons is like went from like world champion to like feuding over the TV champion, and they wouldn't even give him that.
Yeah, I know. Austin and Pillman defeated Arn Anderson and Paul Roma.
Yes, they did.
Which at the time after those tapings came out, it was kind of a swerve because people were figuring that they would lose the titles here because of those tapings that were done so far in advance. So
yes, and they didn't.
They had Dustin Rhodes went to a draw in 30-minute Iron Man match with where they did two falls and the time ran out. I never understood why they just didn't keep the match going. You know, like they did Britt and Shawn at that first Iron Man match?
No, I know.
That was just kind of silly. Ric Flair beat Barry Windham for the NWA title. This was a weird, weird match. Because
it was weird.
It was because something happened during the match and Windham just completely blew his knee out. And it only went like 11 minutes. And Flair puts the figure four on and Windham's just laying there and the ref goes one, two, and three, and it's like the most anticlimactic. He hadn't even had it on long, and it was just like so anticlimactic. And I guess they went to the finish because of his knee. So
yeah.
It was like the referee wasn't even supposed to count three. It was just strange.
It was an odd finish because it could have done so much better. But yeah, like this was like people say this a lot. He was kind of in like Barry Windham could be the best when he wanted to be. But on like shows like, you know, you could tell when he's gonna lose because he has that like mentality on his face. Like, you can actually see it on his face. Kind of like people say that about John Cena now, how you can tell when John Cena's gonna lose just by the look on his face.
Yeah, exactly.
It was kind of like that with him. And
then you had the main event with Sting and Davey Boy over Vader and Sid Vicious, and of course this is the famous one where Vader first did the moonsault.
Yes. Talk all about that match.
It was a good match. Went about 16 minutes. Sid isn't going to do much for you, but you had three other really good workers in there. So the match goes back and forth, and it was kind of weird because you would think that the moonsault would be something to end the match, but they didn't end the match with it. And in the end, it was Davey Boy Smith pinning Vader with a crucifix at about 16 minutes and 44 seconds. Hello, Sinbad, still there?
Yes, I'm here now. Sorry, my phone cut out.
Oh, that's okay.
All right. So, We're at the beginning of August now. So from April to August, we made it, what, 4 months? 3 months?
Yeah.
It's a lot of stuff. Yeah. So this is definitely a lot of stuff to cover. All right, so what we're going to do is on next Tuesday, because we have about 5 minutes left here, so we'll just go ahead and, end it on that note. Next Tuesday, we have from August to cover until the end of the year. And if Contreras up for it, we will record until we get to the end of 93 next week. Even if we, like, go off of the air and have to record for another half hour or an hour or so, we're going to finish it. And we're going to finish 1993 if that's all right with you.
Yeah, that's cool. I can just set the show for 2 hours if you want me to.
Yes. Yeah, we will have it. We'll finish it up, and it'll be a two-hour show next week. We'll cover, because to be honest, like, August and September is not really much going on until, you start building up to that. Actually, this will be the build-up to the reason I want to cut it off now is because coming up is all the good stuff, and I want to get that all on one show. We're going to have the whole Ric Flair build-up with Vader, the Cactus Jack feud with Vader. I mean, all that stuff was just awesome. It was just good, good television. All right, so,
Before we go, I wanted to plug Over the Top Radio this Friday at 9 p.m. Eastern, 8 p.m. Central at blogtalkradio.com/Edward-Laredo. And I think I'm pretty much confident we're going to have Dave Meltzer on Friday, so that should be a good show.
Excellent, excellent. And also while we're doing plugs, if you guys want to, this last week I was on Wrestling Weekly with Doc Young and Les Thatcher. You should download that. It was a really good show. And also this upcoming Saturday I'll be doing it as well. So, of course, f4wonline.com. Most people that listen to this will probably be going there anyways, but people that don't, join the site. It's awesome. And listen to that show because it was a good one. And next week will probably even be better. Hopefully my phone won't cut out like it did here. And it actually cut out for that show as well. So awesome service. All right, Contreras. I appreciate you doing this with me again, of course. So next week we have a two-hour show. It'll be Tuesday, 9 p.m. Eastern, 8 p.m. Central, 2 hours. We'll do from August until the end of the year, 1993, WCW. And also, I'm working on a guest right now. It might even be next week. We might not have a normal show next week. Most likely we will, but I'm working on a guest to talk about 1993 WCW. So we will see. We will both work on getting a guest, and we will let everybody know on the board, or I'll put it on my Facebook, and Katara will put it on his. So everybody take care.